This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the good life.
You're tuned into Living It Up with me, Lerato Shabalala. We are up and live every Thursday from 12 until 1 here on CliffCentral.com. Hello, everybody. How are you? It's another Thursday. You're with me, Lerato Shabalala, on this here podcast called Living It Up. We talk fashion, design, food, wine, travel, one of my favorite things. You can download the podcast on cliffcentral.com or go to a Facebook page, which is Living It Up with me, Lerato Shabalala, to see my wonderful, wonderful guest last week. In fact, why should I tell you who was I talking to last week? What matters is who I'm talking to this week. I am incredibly lucky to have this wonderful woman. We happen to have known each other for a long time. And I thought to myself, I haven't interviewed her. It's one of those few times when you think, because you're colleagues, you think, oh, no, you know, I can't interview you. And then I'll have an opportunity to get into her head and ask her all kinds of questions. So this is very exciting for me. If you hear that buttery laughter, Sorry, did you see what I did there? I'm sitting with the one and only. She's a fashion creator, a stylist, a mama, a daughter to a very, very gregarious and wonderful woman, Papa Mamtusha. Papa Ma, welcome to Living It Up. How are you?
Thank you so much. That was a lovely introduction. I should keep you in my pocket.
Yes. So a lot of people have seen your work. A lot of people wear your work, you know, and I always say that fashion is the greatest form of art because we wear it, you know. It's an expression that you put it on, and I think that's amazing, because most artists put away to be displayed, but you know, you basically display your work, your passions, and the things you love on people. And before we got to, in fact, before we got to into the studio, Pumi, who's one of the Cliff Central family members, said, "Papa, where do these t-shirts? Where do I get these t-shirts?" And actually, I said the same thing as well. Hint, hint, it's my birthday in 2 weeks. So, Papa, before we go into your very iconic t-shirts that almost everyone who's influential has worn, from Carol Bauer to Victor Lamine, who's actually also shot some gorgeous portraits of you, I wanted to get into you as a person. So when somebody hears fashion creative, they're like, okay, but what does that mean? So I wanted to get into, where did you start? How did you get to start Butter Pudding? Because Papama's label is called Butter Pudding. You can go to Butter Pudding. Okay, I'm saying it the way the Queen Bey says it. It's butter, ne? Black people. It's Butter Pudding. BUTTERPUDDING.com, which is where you can actually go to buy these famous Africa is the Future t-shirts. So before you got to Butter Pudding, there was a whole entire career, and there still is, that preceded that. And I remember seeing you a year before, and you're like, oh, I'm trying to think, do this label. And I just gone freelance for about 18 months. I was like, Papama, do it. I was like, no matter what, do it. And 6 months later, you did. And that was amazing, you know? And I think it's nice when we can help each other in the industry to make each other brave and get each other out of our comfort zones, because that's only then we know what we can do, right? Yeah, right?
I just got goosey just remembering that moment.
Remember that moment.
It was a big, big moment. I mean, leaving employment when you've got private school fees and bonds and stuff is a serious leap of faith.
Exactly.
So it will never be lost on me. Where do I start? You know, the other day, I realized a few days ago that I matriculated 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I was in matric.
That was me. I matriculated in 1997. So last year was my 20th anniversary. Crazy. I was like, what?
Hey, 2 decades. I know. It's just insane to think about. But I don't feel it, thank heavens.
And you don't look it.
Thank you. But I've been in the fashion space for since I can remember, since I left school. I matriculated, as I said, 20 years ago, and I almost spent the rest of my life in a white lab coat. My parents were forcing me to follow a more serious vocation. So they had high hopes for me, wanting me to do chemical engineering, which I almost did, because I did math, science, and biology in matric. And then halfway through my matric year, I was like, no, man, I'm too creative with this. I could never actually I couldn't do this. And I don't know where I found the courage to actually
say to them.
When I think about it now, because I have very strict parents, I was like, why? How did I actually stand up?
So can I ask you, when you were a kid, because I always say one of the things I want to do when, should the Lord bless me with money, I want to go to schools in
when
the township.
When the Lord,
yes girl, yeah. I receive. When the Lord blesses me with money and some form of influence, one of the things I'd like to go is to go into elokshini in rural areas and help parents and teachers understand that a kid's hobbies are a sign of what they must do. The things that they love are the things. You see kids who carry cameras when they were young, they eventually become directors. And I think we should look at what your children, you should look at what your children love, because that is what's going to help you figure out the career, not the career that, exactly. So were you one of those people who used to cut up things for their dolls? Did you do that?
Absolutely. I didn't have dolls growing up.
Yeah, neither did I.
But I used to, my parents used to buy me clothes, my mom specifically, and then I would always look at a garment and see its endless possibilities. So I'd always customize my stuff from a very young age. And I used to dress very weirdly.
Are you one of those kids who had like a tutu and jeans and like,
that was me,
yeah,
and spaceship shaped boots and layering was a thing, just to kind of personalize. And I did not want to look like anyone else.
Yeah.
It was a thing for me. I just always never liked to, I liked to stand out using my clothes. So now that I'm a parent, I get to, I'm a little bit more sensitive. I mean, back then I was a bit upset and I couldn't understand why they wouldn't let me live my passion.
Yeah.
But I...
Wanted you to go into chemical engineering.
Yeah, like my sister, and who is a biochemist.
Sure.
And I guess for them, we didn't, back then, we didn't have the Stone Cherries and the David Lally's and the brands that could do stuff with fashion. So all they heard was, oh, my Lord, is that your battle? You want to be a dressmaker? We put you through good schools to be a dressmaker.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
But then, as I said, I had the courage to stand up for myself. I don't know where that came from. It must be the guy above, where I put my foot down and said, no, I will do this. I want to do this, and I know I'm going to do it. Mm. And my dad wasn't really keen, but my mom kind of secretly supported me.
Mm.
And then I left Cape Town, and I went to Johannesburg to study, which is also another thing. It's like, why?
Yeah.
You've got UCT right next door. So
I guess that was a way of view also, trying to stamp your independence, to find yourself under, you know, and away from the gaze of the parentals.
Just do my thing. But what that did for me, Larato, is that it kept me out of trouble. I had a point to prove to my parents. Because, you know, as you know, away from home, and I was 16 at the time, and trying to find my feet, I obviously was tempted to get into stuff. But I didn't have the time. I didn't have the idle time, because I would go to school during school hours, and then after that, I used to make clothes for my schoolmates, my res mates. And then I don't know how I
started. Were you studying fashion?
I studied fashion design. And even then, I actually wormed my way into fashion school, because I needed to have art as a subject in matric, which I didn't have.
Yeah.
I literally spoke my way into, I convinced the head of department that I am what they need. And he kind of bought into my personality, and he gave me a chance, took a bet on me.
We thank him for that.
Desmond, may his soul rest in peace. And yeah, so the rest is history. And I literally just ran with it. I then stumbled upon, do you remember a show called Techniques Out of the Beat with Bonnie Bully and Glenn Lewis?
Yes, yes. I am that age.
Yeah.
Well, I do remember.
CCV, was it CCV TV or SABC? I can't remember.
CCTV, I think, yeah.
And then I used to do that after school. I used to dress Bonnie for the show. So I would go to school and then after school go make clothes for the show. It used to be every Tuesday.
Don't you think it's amazing that when you are... So my dad, my mom also secretly supported me. My dad said, look, listen, I think this is idiotic, this journalism thing. I've seen journalists, you know, he was thinking of Ken Temba and all of them. And basically they were known for being drunks and being poor. And he said, if you fail, you have to pay me back every single cent of that money. So not only did I get distinctions, but I started working pretty early. And like you, when other people, you know, were getting drunk and whatever, I was working. So I think like you, there's something quite interesting when, and I don't think it's because our parents didn't support us. I just think there was no understanding of and worry from their side of what is my child going to do, right?
So if this thing doesn't work out.
Exactly. And I think you needed to have blind ambition to be like, it is going to work out by hell or high water.
Absolutely.
At that point, because you went on to work on two magazines, so at that point, as you're making clothes, you're dressing people, are you thinking about like what you want to do? Are you seeing
I had a clear vision. Okay. I knew the reason I got into fashion, to do fashion design, is that I wanted to learn a skill that I knew that I could never lose, like making clothes, creating things from nothing.
Right.
But what I ultimately wanted to do at that point was to work as a fashion editor. And I did, there was no course back then to teach us how to be a fashion editor.
No.
So what I did, part of our third year syllabus, was to go intern at a design house, part of the fashion design syllabus. And then for me, instead of just going to Mark and Michael or Julian, I decided to go to True Love to intern there in their fashion department. So I called Candice Lee Kanemaya.
Oh my gosh.
A lot. I was actually speaking to her a few days ago.
I owe her a lot as well. I remember there was a time in like...
That's when we met actually.
Yes, in 1999. Yeah. Gosh, we've known each other for a ridiculously long time. She was just always one of those people. She lives in Cape Town now.
I was with her.
Isn't she one of those people that always gave other people a chance? Like she was always willing to... I remember I was going through a tough time in my life and Candice opened her house up for me in Ilovo, and I stayed at her house back almost 20 years ago. So I think she's one of those wonderful earth angels that...
She didn't know me from above, so I literally cold-called her. Hi, my name is Pamam Tisha. I'm a student. I've got an internship thing. Please, can you let me in? She was like, okay, come on Monday, dress like comfortably. And I think on the third day, I was so determined to make an impression. They offered me a job. A fashion assistant job opened up. And I couldn't take it because my parents... I owed my mom that. She said, you have to finish. You have to go and graduate. And I couldn't just abandon my studies.
Yeah.
And I couldn't
take the job. You already were radical
I owed her that, at least. Yeah. So it was quite a character building phase of my life. Because I was like, oh my gosh, I've been working for this. And this is an opportunity that I'll never get. Because back then, there weren't a lot of people of color in magazines. You know what I mean?
No, not even writers. Absolutely. But I guess the thing that's interesting, which is one of the things I always say, is that what is yours won't miss you.
What is yours? But I know this now.
Now, yes, exactly.
18. Back
so
then.
We need to say it to 18-year-olds when an opportunity that you think was yours misses you. What is yours won't miss you. So if it's meant for you, it'll come back.
That is so true.
Right?
That is so, I live by that.
Yeah, me too.
As a result, I don't chase. I don't chase
me too.
Anything.
Me too. I'm the same.
Anything.
I'm the same. And if it misses me, I'm like, Lord, universe, it wasn't meant for me because what is mine won't miss me.
Yeah.
So you then go back and study.
I go
and
back
you're
and
bummed.
Finish. I'm so bummed, Lerato. I go back to school and I'm like, oh my gosh. So they gave the job. This is exact to your point. They got, remember Primrose?
Yes, I remember Primrose, yes.
She then got the job, a fashion assistant. I then went back to school, extremely bummed. Then I finished, graduated. I got a job at Suffolk Creations as a junior designer, making uniforms.
Sure.
Also character building.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I lasted 27 days. I couldn't. I hated the people I worked with. I didn't like the offices and the factory work. It was just not for me. And I resigned with no plan B.
Yeah.
Guess what? The same day I resigned, I get a call from Candice saying, hi, you know, we got the job we offered you, we gave it to a lady called Primrose. She's now landed an international L'Oreal contract.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to work. So are you still keen?
Yeah, because what is yours will not miss you. It'll never miss you.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, because it's interesting when you make a decision about your life. It's that thing that they say that, you know, the universe conspires to, it'll meet you halfway to support you. When you make that decision to like, I'm going to quit and I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but this right here is not it.
Yeah.
Because you've already told the universe really clearly what you want. It says, okay, here you go. Here you go.
And I mean, it wasn't intentional. It was purely based on what I was feeling and just following the feeling. And I often say to people, you know how for some people things have to make sense? For me, things have to feel right.
Yeah.
I've always been that kind of that way inclined. If it doesn't, whether it's relationships, jobs, or anything, if it doesn't feel right, I then bow out or I stay away.
I think that that feeling, Papama, is
is the secret.
Because we can't talk to God, we can't converse with Him. He has to implant Himself within us. That's why when we pray, we say, Our Father. So He has to instinct, gut, all of that is the higher force, so that you know it's the thing that says, oh, this is not right. Yeah. That is inbuilt in us. What we choose to do is ignore it as we get older. But that thing doesn't go away, because it's Him trying to, the force, anyway, whatever that force is to you, trying to direct you. So it's a wonderful thing to embrace about yourself, because you're like, this is not right. This is not cool. And when it's right, you know, everything's like,
feels good. Yeah.
It's like when you said, I want to quit my job and do the label thing. I was like, do it. Because the moment, because we're spirits, remember, the body's just a vehicle. So the moment your soul said it to mine, I was like, yes, that's what she should be doing. Because I'd wear your clothes. You know? You know?
Thank you for that. Thank you. So I then went back to True Love. I had a great time, worked with Kani and Candace, and it was quite an eye-opener into the industry. And Candace was hard on me, and I hated it then, but I don't spare the moment to thank her, because I think it kind of set the foundation of how I work right now. She's extremely professional. She always goes beyond the call of duty. And that's what we sell. We sell a peace of mind to customers. Whether I'm making clothes or styling for an ad campaign, I'm selling a peace of mind. So I always need to be over-prepared.
Yep.
And that's what she instilled in me. And you are always as good as your last job. Yeah. So don't think, oh, I've been doing this for 15, 20 years. I can do it in my sleep.
No.
It doesn't work
cockiness,
like that.
Cockiness. Mm. And that's, I keep saying this to people. And people think I'm being like airy fairy. I really think that failure is a wonderful thing that happens to us as people, because you learn nothing from success. You learn absolutely nothing from success, particularly about yourself. It is when you're trying to figure it out, when you're struggling, when you're trying to put the pieces together, that's when you learn. I mean, you talk about Candace being hard to you. My first editor, Alice Bell, I'd moved to Cape Town. I'd walk into her office, never interview. I mean, this was before like cell phones were the thing. This is how old I am. And she would say, I want the story, go get it. And she'd look at her computer and she'd be like, you're dismissed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And I'd cry and I'd go, I can't do it, I can't do it. But guess what? Each and every time I did it. Each and every time I surpassed myself. And I guess maybe that's what Candace was trying to do for you, is to make you excellent.
Yeah.
And excellence requires practice.
To use my absolute potential.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just coast along.
Yeah, because you could, you know.
Of course. Be be mediocre, 50%.
Exactly, exactly.
And yeah, she always pushed, and it was painful then, but now with the benefit of hindsight, I'm eternally grateful to her.
Mm.
And I always remind her of that. So that was that. And then I left magazines. I left True Love, and then I freelanced for different mags within the fashion space. And then I left magazines completely, and then I consulted for Sony, which is a music company, and I worked with really amazing bands, music bands, creating the images, brands like Mafiki Zolo. Mafiki Zolo was a three-man band, when Tebogo Rest in Peace was there, we had the best times creating their looks and, you know, making them.
What I loved about Sony at the time, and I know we're having an industry conversation, but there were so many people at that label. We used to have the listening sessions where we'd get all the journalists in one room and we'd be listening to an album with the artist. Sony was fantastic at the time. It really was.
With Malaika and all those bands. So I did that, and that was fun. And then I left music, got into TV, styled for TV shows. And then I went back into magazines because, you know, I loved it. And when Kanye came back from Harvard, she was starting Destiny magazine. She called me up and she was like, I've got this dream. Do you want to be part of it? I was like, yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I want to be part of it. This will be my 5-year plan. And then 9 years later, I was still there. And I think that's when I got together with you and I was like, I want to go back. I've got this unfinished business with creating beautiful things. And I've been working on this dream for the longest time and I'd want to go back to it, and I think now is the time to do it. And I was so scared because by then my life had completely shifted. I had
children
and kids and whatever and responsibilities, and it wasn't as easy a decision. But I spoke to a few people and I prayed a lot and I just took that leap of faith. It's been the best decision.
I think that I think it's been the best decision for the rest of us, because when you have gifts and talents, you must share them. That's service. That's actually what serving actually is. If you're just listening, you are listening to, if you just tuned in, this is Living It Up with me, Lerato Shabalala, and I'm having the best conversation with Butter Puddings, Papama Mutwisha. She's a mama, a stylist, a daughter, a friend. I remember we were at a Carolina Herrera event. We still have a picture actually from that night. And
you were looking fabulous.
Thanks, so are you. And I remember saying to you, it will be hard. It will be hard. But the worst thing that could happen is that it could bomb. You know, that's the worst thing that could happen. I think like so many people are worried about doing things because they're thinking, abantu bazothini, should it not work out? She thought the rest of us don't want to start businesses. But the point is, it's all about just getting the start, switching it on, the start button, and seeing, you know, where it goes. So you decide, okay, it's 9 years. I'm
going to... 4 years post my...
Yes, I'm going to leave date.
Yeah.
And you obviously have other things that you've planned. What did you set in motion? Because I had a little bit of money to carry me along, but I think one of the things the industry has taught me is to be gracious all the time, because you never know who you're going to need to talk to. So what had you done to prepare yourself for that moment? Not that you could do everything. I mean, you'd need like a million and no worries, but what did you put in place to help it, to help yourself get there further?
Well, I when I was at Destiny magazine as the fashion and lifestyle director, I was also a creative director at Luminance. So I was working two jobs at the same time and earning two salaries, but my lifestyle didn't change. And it was intentional. So a big chunk of my salary I would put into savings.
Okay.
Because I had a plan and I had this dream that I needed to come to bring to life.
So instead of buying the labels, instead of going shopping,
a bigger house, I saved my savings, a big chunk of my salary, and I still maintained the same lifestyle. And I will never forget, you know, people saying, you're still driving this car.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody said to me, what kind of an editor are you who drives a Taz?
I mean, I'm like, guys, but my car's fully paid. Exactly. It's paid up. I don't have those issues. It drives. It can carry my kids. But I mentioned that because I think the Bantu Bazothini syndrome is real. Yeah, we joke about it, but it's a thing.
It is.
And it seeps into you in weird ways. Yep. When you least expect it, it attracts you from
payment. Exactly.
You think, damn, I actually, you know.
And then also just the no, I'm starting my own. First, you say it with embarrassment. No, I'm starting my own. Because you're just like, please, I don't. You're managing your own expectations. Yeah. It's dangerous.
Yeah. So you need to get that. I needed to get that right. I needed to be so focused on my dream that I wasn't really listening to the noise and working according to other people's schedules and people's journeys and paths. I did that, and then also with Luminance, I mean, my boss was extremely Kanye was very, very supportive, in the sense that I told her after I had my second child that I don't want to go back to work in the office because I've got this thing, this dream that I want to do, and I'd like to see, to start on it while I'm on maternity leave, and then I can do both. And she was like, yeah, man, as long as you do what you give me what I need, you can do whatever you want to do in your spare time. You can work from home if you want, but as long as you meet your deadlines and you...
Yeah.
So that was quite a big thing for me. So having that flexibility and an understanding boss was a big deal. And then, so the savings and speaking and being transparent with my boss about it. And then...
Yeah, because the last thing you want is to be sneaking around, hiding things.
That's bad karma.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad energy. You don't want to start off from there. And I then... obviously, with my industry connections, that really did help a lot.
Yep.
Because I'd been in the industry for so long. So speaking to people like Marianne Fassler, who shared her wisdom and expertise and stuff with me free of charge. Speaking to a few people just to kind of understand how the landscape's changed in the design world as an entrepreneur really did help. So by the time I left, I had... kind of laid down some sort of foundation, but the most important foundation was working on self.
Yeah,
I needed to do that.
It's so funny, 100%. People don't realize how much is on the self, you know what I mean? Like, they don't understand how much your personal growth helps you move forward.
Yeah, I needed to work on self to understand and believe the fact that and own the fact that obstacles will come, but I need to kind of ride the wave,
yeah,
and not be dismayed, and also just working my ass off. Can I say ass off?
Yes, you can. You can say ass too. Yes.
Working my ass off. I wasn't scared of that. And also, I needed to know that this was my passion and believe that with every fiber of my being, because that's the passion is what kept me up at night when the kids, I just put the kids to sleep, then I'd work until 3 a.m.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't feel it. So I needed to make sure that I was doing this because I loved it. And it was a bigger... dream. It was bigger than me. It was bigger than just making money. And the way I set up the business from the get-go is indicative of that. You know, how proceeds of our sales, of every item that we sell, goes to a fund, our fund that then helps child-oriented charities. Because I think everything that I do needs to have some sort of benefits to the rest of the community.
I think
that makes me feel good.
Don't you think so? I think people think, oh, you know, you give because you're guilty in some way. But the truth of the matter is that giving is so good for you as a person. You know what I mean? You don't even have to see the person, the kid, whose life is going to be touched by the little proceeds that you give them. But it's just knowing that when you leave the earth, you would have done something more than just your immediate family. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I thought I liked you. Now I'm huge. Huge admiration.
It's a big deal because I think there's a lot of us that complain about how things aren't the way they're supposed to be. But the question I ask is, what are you doing in your personal capacity? Yes, the government is not doing enough or whatever is not doing enough. But what are you doing?
What are you doing? Exactly.
So, and then I get into so many heated debates and conversations about that with people, especially having started this campaign, where people will come and say, yeah, but Africa time is now. It's not now. Look at the president. Look at the... I'm like, guys, no. Be the change you want to see, as Mahatma Gandhi
said. Exactly.
For instance, and it's not to pant or whatever. So no, for me, I make an example.
That's what you're here for.
Is
yeah.
that I also work with Lamppost, which is a production agency that sells my skill to advertising.
Yeah.
So I make sure that my assistant or assistants are people of color.
Yes.
Who are competent, but are because we all know advertising is lily white.
Yes.
And we have people like us that are as capable and as talented, but just don't have a door in.
Yeah.
So for me, it's my way of opening doors for other people.
I think it's so crucial what you're saying, because part of the things that I wanted to do with my book was to say, who do you use who is black? So for instance, I do my nails at a black salon. This white shirt that I'm wearing, you can see it later when we post the pictures, is Rubicon. It's a black woman who made it. I do my hair there. So I deliberately, and one of the things I was saying to people was, look at your service providers and choose people of color, because the only way the stigma of we are not professional, we are not this, will be out, is when we can show real examples. My friend Mukhadi Zweng, I use her if I need her. Something to get exactly to be catered for. Lebo Mutsuenyane, who's a great
lucky number eight,
I use her. Yeah. So I think there's enough of an example, there are enough examples for us to deliberately choose our people. Because the only way you keep people out of participating in the country is to keep them out of the economy.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to be,
yeah,
inside the economy.
And it's better for everyone when that
all
happens.
Of us.
Not just black people, but for everyone in the country.
Exactly.
Because then we mitigate and we close that gap. That
exactly.
Disparity.
Exactly.
And then we eradicate the stuff that's not supposed to be there.
Yeah, and I think it's important to do that. So how did you choose the name Butter Pudding? Before we get to your Africa's the Future campaign and the day you realized you didn't just want to feel it, but you actually wanted to declare it. But I want to talk about Butter Pudding is such a... It makes me feel happy.
Yeah. I like saying it. I love the way it rolls off my tongue.
Yes.
Butter Pudding.
Yes.
It's my favorite dessert.
Oh.
It's my favorite dessert. And more importantly... this came afterwards, but it is my favorite dessert and I like the sound. But it is a dessert that needs the simplest of ingredients.
Yeah.
I say this all the time. You need bread.
Yeah.
Stale bread, Nohal.
Exactly.
You need eggs, sugar, milk. And it's ingredients that you always have, whether it's the 15th of the month, you always have that in your
yes.
fridge. And once you put that together and then you bake it
magic.
In the oven, something decadent really comes out.
Yeah, I mean, it's that... thing that I always say, that I love potatoes, but potatoes grow from under the earth, so you don't know what you've got until you dig them out and they come out and they're beautiful. So I
yeah.
think that in darkness and in times when you don't have a lot, you can make
creativity.
Wonderful create wonderful things from rubbing two sticks together.
Absolutely.
You know,
so that's what butter pudding is.
Yeah.
It's the simplest of designs. Our designs are, we keep them simple for a reason and pretty straightforward, but then we mix that simple design with interesting fabrics or a plain t-shirt with an interesting message, and then magic happens, just like butter pudding. So the simplest and basic of ingredients, but when you infuse them together, something really, really delicious and decadent comes out.
And I mean, I guess maybe I'm going to be Captain Obvious here, but I assume that a lot of it was inspired by being a mother yourself. That thing of like you're going into a shop and you're not finding things for your kids, that and that's not to diss anyone, please understand me, but we all have an aesthetic and you think, I want Kwizi to look in a particular way, to dress in a particular way. I want her to the way you wore your boots, you know, when you were a kid. Is that what sort of inspired why you didn't start with a she women's range with, you know, sequins and all that?
100%. Kids and fashion are my two passions.
Yeah.
It sounds so cliche. Fashion is my passion. But they are. I love kids. I was a Sunday school teacher up until I had Kwizi. And I've always said I wanted to go back, but I haven't made the time. And I've got five godchildren. So my house is always full of kids. I love kids. I love the energy, and I like being a kid. It also reminds me of my own childhood, and yeah, I'm obsessed with kids. And then fashion, obviously, I studied it. I love it, and it's what I do.
Yeah.
So merging those two passions together made so much sense.
Yeah.
And coupled with the fact that when I was looking for stuff for my kids, I couldn't really find. And also having traveled the world when I was working with Luminance, seeing what other brands are doing out there, and what there was a huge gap with what we were doing here, and even internationally, because we now export to the fashion capital, you know, like Paris and stuff. So there's a huge gap, and we needed to fill that gap, and
yeah.
I was equipped to do it, and I just did it, and
so
it's paid off.
So for somebody who's, and I think what you do is something that a lot of South Africans consider, want to do, but they think, oh, I'm going to get lost in the white noise of there's so many other people who design. When you were writing your USPs, what did you put up as the thing that sets you aside from everybody else who's already making clothes?
Good quality. Good quality is pivotal. because we've had such a bad reputation as local designers. Mm. That's why people will go to H&M, because the quality is better or whatever. So I put a lot of research and a lot of love into and a lot of time in researching the right CMT to partner up with, because we don't have our own factory just as yet.
Oh, okay.
So I partner up with the CMT, and it's an owner run CMT, and it's intentionally that way because it's just more intimate, as opposed to just working with a big factory and you're just a number, an order number. So I work with a factory, and I've been fired by factories who've told me that, come on, it's just kids' clothes. What do you mean we have to overlock the hem? It's going to be lined anyway. And I'm like, guys, no.
Yeah.
Because I've worked with the top brands in the world.
Yeah.
And that's what they beat us on. Because a white t-shirt is a white t-shirt is a white t-shirt. Yeah. So what differentiates a normal white t-shirt to a Calvin Klein t-shirt or a Balenciaga t-shirt is the quality, the choice of fabric, and all of that stuff.
Completely. Like, I like white vests, and I only wear white vests from the Gap because I love how they feel.
And when they wear, they hug your skin.
Yes, the way they hug my skin.
And how they age.
Yeah. And I love the fact that not after three washes, you know, the hem is not going to start.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we keep our designs very simple because we want the garments, because we also understand that the kids outgrow their stuff very quickly.
Mm.
It's biologically. So we want the stuff to last a little bit longer. So if the kids outgrows it, you want to be able to give it to hand it down to a relative or to a sibling. So the quality needs to hold.
Yeah.
So we ensure that when we create our stuff, that makes sense. And then also packaging. Packaging is key. You know, we're selling a lifestyle. We're selling a feeling. We're selling convenience. So we're an online-based store because I want Lerato, when she's stuck in traffic and she needs a gift because she's going to a birthday party and she's forgotten, just go on our website and it comes to you already. You don't have to worry about stuff. You've picked it from your car, from the comfort of your car, and it comes to you wrapped. Or we can deliver it if you can't make it to the body. We deliver it to your door, wrapped, and all you have to do. So we're selling that convenience.
And I can say, as somebody who it's part of also my ethos of buying black as well. So the packaging is fantastic. When I bought for my godson, who's in New York, everybody knows. I loved how it looked. I brought it as it was in the packaging, because it was so beautiful. I mean, I love when you're sort of at the design fair watching you put the stuff together for your customers. There's a
and
lot of love
when
in there.
It's still one of my favorite things to do in the business. When I wrap, I still do that, believe it or not. When I wrap stuff for our customers, and then we say a little good wish as the package, because everything is energy. So whoever's going to wear it, whether it's a kid buying our shoes or a t-shirt, you know, a little message of encouragement or positivity as we wrap it. So there's love that goes with the courier to your door. You might not see it, but you'll feel it when you put the stuff on. And we get a lot of feedback from our customers, a lot of feedback. It's a big deal for us on the packaging and how good it made them feel, because it's an after sell.
Yeah.
When they've parted their money, but then when they receive the gift, that feeling comes back. Cause it's like, oh my gosh, this beautiful tissue paper, it smells good, and the ribbon, and that.
And also so it feels like a gift, you see.
Because it is a gift. Yeah. It is a gift you're gifting to someone or gifting to yourself if you're buying for yourself.
Exactly.
It's hard-earned money that you're parting with.
Yeah.
So that's what's one of our USPs.
Yeah.
And customer service is a big deal. We get a lot of repeat customers because of that. Actually, a bulk of our business is from that. Whether it's a customer who's paying $100 or a customer who's paying 2,000 rands. Everyone's treated the same. There's not like, oh no, it's just, you know.
Yeah, it's just
buy
another,
one item.
Yeah.
But it's everyone.
So a lot of people, you mentioned this before we got on air, that a lot of people in South Africa still worry about buying online.
Yeah.
There's still some trepidation. Will it fit? I don't know if it'll be right. How do you mitigate that kind of thing? I mean, what do you say to people who are like, I don't know? Because I think that overseas and for a certain tier of South Africans, it's normal. But I think there is a large group of people who, a large group of the nation that still struggles with buying online. So how do you mitigate that, since you don't have a physical
store?
Yeah,
we have a contact us page on our website that people can send an email, and they'll send an email saying I want to buy a reversible coat, blah blah blah, in this size, and then we will do up an invoice.
Yeah.
And then they pay via EFT.
So it's info@butterpudding.com.
They can send an email after having looked at our website and then tell us what they need. And or they can call us.
Okay.
There's a number on the website.
Okay.
And the number's always on. And then we can speak it through and then send an invoice. Yeah.
I'm still talking to Papa Mom Twisha. She is a fashion creative, stylist, fashion editor, lifestyle editor, friend, mama. You know, just a wonderful person who's been in the industry for an incredibly long time. We met each other when we were quite young. Jesus. And here we are. You'll get to see pictures of Papama on our Facebook page, Living It Up. And also you can download the podcast on cliffcentral.com. So the t-shirt that you're wearing today and that many other people, and soon me, Africa, our time is now, and Africa is the future. How did that ethos, because I think it's a value, I think you have to value. So when I turned 30, one of the things I realized is that, which was moons ago, I had traveled to places overseas by myself, but I hadn't been on the continent by myself. And I wondered what that was saying about me and my thinking. So I then decided to change that, because the best thing to do is you can't control the world around you, but you can control yourself. So I gifted myself with a trip by myself to Kenya. I spent some time in Mombasa. I was by the beach. I went to this cave restaurant called Alibaba for my birthday. I dined by myself.
Wow.
And people kept asking me, like, where's the man? Why are you here alone? And what I wanted to show was that you could have just as an amazing experience outside our home as inside our home. And I fell in love with Kenya, and I think, you know, Kenyans are wonderful people, and I think we need to do more of that. And also my feeling is that I'm not afraid of people. I'm not afraid of people. If other people can get around in our countries, so can I. And I think that's one of the things I wanted to do, is to say to people, go out more, go see the continent more. And also, I think I worry that South Africa is seen as the United States of Africa, that we feel like we don't need to go anywhere because we are everything. Mm-hmm. And it's not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can learn so much from Ghanaians. Excuse me, one of the best architects in the world, and probably the best one at the moment, is David Ajayi, and he's from Accra. He designed the Museum of Modern African thing in Chicago. So, like, he, you know what I mean? So we can learn from other people. So how did this happen? What was the trigger that made you go, I actually want to put this on a t-shirt, I want to see people wear it? Like, what happened?
Where do I start? Obviously, we own a kiddies brand, Butter Pudding. And part of the reason, of the big reason why we started the kiddies brand, was to ensure a better future for our generation.
Mm.
Which is why, as I said earlier on, part of the proceeds we make go to child-oriented charities. And then I stumbled, a while back, I stumbled upon, on Pinterest, a poster that had the powerful message that said Africa is the future, and it totally landed in the right place and resonated with me. And then I did some research, and I found that the slogan was started by two French guys,
okay,
14 years ago, and it was a 10-year campaign that they had stopped, I think, 2 years prior to when I found it, because the 10 years had lapsed. And it was controlled, it was in France, in Paris specifically. And then I contacted this guy saying, this is who I am, and I've started Kitty's brand, and this makes sense, especially where we are right now, as a country, as a continent, and being a Kitty's brand, and I think our kids need to own and live and just believe in this message from a very young age. And can you imagine what could happen as they grow up? Because it's as I always say, that it's easier to raise strong men than to fix strong kids than to fix, you know, broken men or women. So, and then I got that ball rolling. We started printing the t-shirts, And
so did you need rights from them to use it?
Of course. I mean, they started it and they stopped it. And I just wanted to carry it on in Africa as opposed to Europe.
Okay.
And the time made sense.
Yeah.
And the
does it require paying? What's the process?
No, just permission,
okay.
really.
Okay.
And then we ran with that for a while. And it was very well received. Still is very well received. Mm. And then one day, some life had happened to me in the interim. And the fact that how you feel about yourself informs everything going forward. Stop being a theory, it became a truth.
Mm.
And it's a big thing happened in my life that kind of forced me to believe that. And I practiced that and it was true. And then I thought, no man, how about we find a more immediate message as opposed to being in the future, which was relevant for then, 14 years ago.
Mm.
Now it is our time. Mm. It is our time. And I've always believed it. And I'll never forget the day that message landed, but it wasn't encapsulated in this message, was when I was with Luminance and I was at Oscar de la Renta's office and we were buying from them for Luminance and a dress, because when you go to the showrooms, they've got models prancing around and then you pick a dress that makes sense for your brand. And there was a dress that walked down. It was one of their finales. And I remember looking at this beautiful black and white dress thinking, oh my gosh, David Tlale, my mom has a dress from David Tlale exactly like this.
Wow.
Exactly like this. David's was a little bit shorter, and Oscar de la's was longer, but it was exactly the same dress, same fabric and everything. And then I remember thinking, no man, this is crazy. And obviously Oscar's sold for like 100 times the price. And then a few years later, a year later, I was at Cosa Como in Milan, and I saw Comme des Garçons, a French designer who had, remember Daki?
Mm. Yes, I remember Daki.
Who
yes.
used to do
yes.
the garments with ties.
Yes.
The design house had this brand, and I remember thinking, no man, we've been doing this.
Yes.
So it's always been our time, but we haven't really had the exposure and the self-belief that we've always had.
We hadn't woken up to ourselves.
We hadn't woken up to ourselves.
Yeah.
And I've always known this, I guess, and this was just proven by these incidents. And then a few years ago, I got this message done by an artist in a few fonts. And then I slept on it for about 2 years because I wasn't ready. And we also had the Africa is the future message. And then one day, I'll never forget this day, I was trying to nap. I was so tired. I'd been working. And my daughter's bedroom gets the best sun in the house. And I was trying to take a nap for like an hour so that I could wake up and carry on working. And as I lay my head on the pillow, the message, it sounds all airy-fairy, but it's so true. It gives me goosebumps every time I think of it. This message started flooding my head on how I need to make this work. I need to do this. This is the time to get this message out there. And this is exactly how I'm going to do it. And then I was trying to sleep and ignore the message, but it was so loud. And I get messages all the time, but this one was just keeping me up. And I was like, oh, I just need to sleep. Can you just one? Ended up getting a notebook and writing down all the thoughts and the feelings that I was getting about this message, how I'm going to roll out this campaign.
Mm.
And I then got the t-shirt sampled. I actually chose, I think 5 different fonts of the, and then obviously it needed to be a bold message because I'm a minimalist by nature.
Mm.
But the message needed to work as a billboard. So it needed to be bold. So I chose the font, got the thing sampled, and then I worked out a plan of how we're going to roll it out. And I then called up the people that fronted the campaign. So your Kojos, your Bassies, your Azaz. And every single person that I called, Lerato, everyone I called didn't flinch. Everyone was like, yeah, we'll be there. Just tell us when.
I can tell you that I was looking like, damn, why didn't you call me? Because I think it was something that most of us were like, I want to be a part of it. I want to be a part of it. Yeah.
And the list was long, hey? The list was very long. There were so many people that I didn't end up calling because I was also like, but I don't want to abuse people because I also struggle with, it's something I need to work on, asking for favors. It's a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And also, there were a lot of people that I did call that we just couldn't get to
the time
to get to, you know, because people have busy schedules. But they've shown incredible support to the campaign post that, you know, like people like Nelson Makamo, who embodies the message. I mean, his story is amazing.
Yeah.
And I knew him before he was Nelson Makamo. And having watched him to become who he is right now is... exactly this. He believed in this message long before it was a message.
I mean, I went to his second big-ish showing before he, you know, before he reached the levels where Swizz Beatz is now owning a Nelson Makamo, right?
Giorgio Armani.
So Nelson Makamo.
I mean, hello.
And I remember thinking, I can't afford it. I should buy it. I feel like this guy is going to be big. But I'm like, ugh. And then as I deliberated and I walked around Circa and I thought, okay, let me go back and actually think of everything was sold out. And from that day, it was like major, you know. And I know he's a huge supporter as well.
He's a huge, huge supporter. I mean, he's bought so many T-shirts. Every time he travels, he'll buy some for his family and his friends, and he takes it because he wants to spread the message.
Yeah.
And when we spearheaded the campaign, it was the intention was so clear that we're spearheading it, but it's for everyone, and everyone must own it. Even the people that fronted it was just like, you own it, you run with it. It's for all of us.
Yeah.
And the dream is to have every single person who's African, whether African by birth or state of mind, to be exposed to the message in some way. Because we've breathed, the force has breathed life into it.
Yeah.
So it I mean, we get the most amazing messages, Lerato. How this message affects people.
Yeah.
Just a simple message on a T-shirt, how it kind of has done this. Like, just changed.
Also, I think what's great about it is that people, sorry to interrupt you, people will take images with the T-shirt in different places. Yeah. So I distinctly remember Carol Bauer in Paris wearing, because it's an interpretation. Because what you do when you are a creator of things, an artistic person, you create something and then you have to release it for people to do what they want with it, because then it's no longer yours. Mm. It is theirs.
And that's how it gains more life.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're not trying to give the cookie and hold it at the other end. And I remember seeing the buildings behind her and the suit. She wore a black suit. And that T-shirt juxtaposed in that environment was, I thought to myself, so many people must have stopped her. So many people must have said, where did you get that T-shirt? Where are you from? You know.
That happens everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the kind of feedback we get. Yoli Zam.
My bestie.
Yeah,
it was her birthday last week.
Constantly buying more T-shirts because she's like, oh, I've had to part with mine because someone took it off my back.
Yeah.
Oh, I've had to give mine away to whatever. It happens all the time. So much so that we haven't, as I said, I don't chase. We haven't done much marketing besides people just marketing social media, and not even everything. It's just Instagram because it's the only thing I'm on.
Yeah.
We are now supplying Diane Opoti in Kenya, her store.
Wow.
We've got an agent in France who handles the European region with the message in the States, in the US, in Australia. I would have sooner thought Iceland than Australia. We're getting so much love from as far as Australia, people wanting to stock the T-shirts in their stores and spreading the message. And Zanzibar.
And that's what it's about, right? It's about like the message spreading. You have to release your work, though. By the way, you can follow Papama on Instagram. It's PAPAMAMAR. Okay, so Papama R. So you can follow her on Instagram to see exactly what we talk about, to see how fast.
Oh, Africa, Your Time Is Now. Okay. It's also got its own handle.
Okay.
Africa, Your Time Is Now. And YouTube, I highly recommend that everyone, when they've got time, goes on YouTube and watches the video.
Yeah.
There's a video we took, a behind-the-scenes video, where we asked the people that fronted the campaign about what the message means to them and what kind of Africa they wish for the next generation and all of that. It is goosebump-raising stuff. I mean, I watched it the other day because I had a meeting with an agency in Cape Town a few days ago about the video. And I had to watch it again, and it doesn't...
It doesn't get old.
It doesn't get stale.
So with only a couple of minutes, there's like 5 minutes left. You've just helped me figure out how I want to close the show. I have been chatting to fashion creative Papama Mtwisha. You can find her on Instagram, Papama R P A P A M A M A R. She is on Instagram. You can find her there. You'll see pictures of her on our Facebook page, Living It Up. You can also download the podcast on cliffcentral.com. The last question I want to ask you is inspired by literally what you just said 30 seconds ago. And you can watch the video on Africa Your Time Is Now, right? On YouTube.
Yeah. It's on my handle.
Yes.
There's a link. There.
Okay.
If you click on the link, it takes you straight to the
bio. So what does it mean to you, one, I'm going to ask you two questions, and one, to be an African right now, and what do you hope it means for your children?
Sure, it's a big question.
Well, you said it's goosebumps. You gave it to me.
It's a big question. Yeah. I have the biggest and brightest dreams for Africa. We're living it right now, and we're surely on our way. I dream of an Africa with endless possibilities, mm-hmm. where every single African believes in their birthright to succeed. We've always had the wisdom, we've always had the technical know-how, we've always had the heritage. We just need to remember who we are. Mm-hmm. We just need to remember, forget the lies that we've been fed with, forget the bamboozlement that's happened in the past few centuries. Mm-hmm. Just dig deep and remember who we are. Mm. That's all we have to do. Mm. Not too much. Just remember who we are. We are kings and queens. Mm. And live accordingly. Mm. That's all I wish for us. Mm. You know, as a nation, and for our kids, to just remember who we are.
Mm.
And we don't need the validation that we've been led to believe that we need.
No.
So we are this kind of nation where we survive on handouts.
No.
We've always had it. And it's lovely. I mean, it's not an original message. It's just capturing the zeitgeist, because I feel it everywhere I go, and testament to the success of this simple t-shirt, message on a t-shirt, and how far it's gotten, is that people are tapping into the movement, into the energy of it all. Mm. It's our time. It really is our time. There is no doubt about it. And it's a message that cuts across all disciplines, whether you're in sports, in foods, in creative, in commerce. It is our time. We are the thing, not even the next big thing. We are the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think more than anything, that people have to remember that we all have a seat at the table.
There's enough sun to shine on all of us.
So no matter, we don't have, in fact, if anything, we need to big each other up, because part of receiving your blessings is letting other people flourish in their own blessings. So lastly, when you're dreaming in your head, when you're having fantasies about butter pudding and what it will be like, what does that look like? What does the, when you're like, you know what, this will be sweet. You know, when you're swinging off a chair and the girls are somewhere else and you're watching them, what's that feeling of elation of like, this is what I hope to see for butter pudding?
Oh my gosh, we have a footprint all over the world. We are dressing kids all over the world, as far as wide as Australia and Iceland even. And we're changing the world, because the more we are everywhere, the more sales we make, and the more money is available to the butter pudding fund, and the more lives we can change.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, we are a global brand. We are, I used to say, the top three best brands, kiddies brands in the world, but I think the best kiddies brand in the world, that's where I see butter pudding.
I want to thank you for your bravery. I want to thank you for just even asking me that evening whether you should do this thing and go ahead with it, because what has happened, and this is the thing, is that you dream of something, but the universe has a bigger dream for you, because it's anointed, it's already decided that you're going to win it, this thing. So as somebody who doesn't have kids yet, I cannot wait to dress my kids in one of your designs. I hope that the universe blesses you and takes you right up to your highest order of calling. I hope that in moments of doubt, you remember this. You remember how you've helped us and built all of us. And I bless you on behalf of all black women who are looking to people like you to keep shining the light on yourselves and other people and the plight of others. And thank you very, very much for being you, Papa Mutisha.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank guys, that was the podcast. You can get on cliffcentral.com, butterpudding.com, shop online. You can go to info@butterpudding.com to ask Papama how to get a hold of her clothes, whether you are in Paris, Lagos, or London. You can buy her clothes no matter where you are in the world. Africa, your time is now. Bye, everybody.
Welcome to the good life.
You're tuned into Living It Up with me, Lerato Shabalala. We are up and live every Thursday from 12 until 1 here on cliffcentral.com.
Can't escape from the bottom to the top of my lifestyle. Living life like a beginning, this is only beginning. Close my eyes and imagine a good life.
Better than the life I live.
This is cliffcentral.com.